Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons stars in the new MGM Plus original series, The Westies.
There it is, Javits Center.
Biggest construction project in the history of New York falls into the lap of the Irish.
This Irish crime gang built New York City on blood, sweat, and loyalty. Their legend is true.
The Italians outnumber us about 100 to 1.
Their story is criminal.
This Irish guy's threatening war.
He's gotta go.
Keep out of Hell's Kitchen.
The Westies. Watch now. Only on MGM Plus.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 288. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Troll Ballins coming at you here. I don't know, middle of September, something like that. We're reviewing Mulan today, and we're talking best remakes. And we're talking to Paul. We did talk to Pauly Shore as well, which just has absolutely nothing to do with either of those two things. But we did talk to Pauly Shore. So
we sure have some thoughts on Mulan.
Yeah.
There's our relation.
I have more thoughts on Tenet. We will be reviewing Tenet later in the week. We are all going to have a chance to see it in theaters. So we're going to review Tenet. Just going to get it out. Not that actually, I don't want to say get it out of the way, because it's actually, I fucking loved it. However, it is the most confusing movie that Christopher Nolan has ever released, without question. Like, and I'm not one who finds Inception very confusing. Like, I think there's a lot of moving parts, but it's fairly easy to understand what happens. Like, if you pay attention. I don't know if Tenet you can say that, even though I did get it, but it's an incredibly fucking confusing movie.
I didn't think there was anything that was – I thought Interstellar was more confusing than Inception.
I would agree. I think this Interstellar is probably the most. I think Tenet now holds that crown, and I do think some people are going to hate it because of that.
And Interstellar is not confusing, I think, in a way that is – like I don't understand the plot. It's like conceptualizing.
Science. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's just conceptualizing something your brain's not programmed to do, right? Mm. Like in terms of like the linearity of time or whatever. I don't know. Now I'm just fucking diarrhea out of my mouth. What are you gonna do?
We will review it later on in the week, though. So we'll get way more into it. But today it is Mulan. Did you pay $30? Did you watch the movie? The Facebook crowd saw the movie a lot more than the Twitter crowd did. Notice that. That's, I think, I imagine a kid's thing, but we'll take a parent's review of this movie as well. Cause this is not a movie for kids. At least no. In comparison to the original one.
It's not a movie where I would say, I mean, I guess your kid could be scared of parts and, you know, there's sword fighting.
People die. It's arrows. People die. Get hit by arrows and shit. Yeah.
I guess
it's a soft PG-13, though.
I don't have any I mean, maybe this makes me a bad parent, but like, I don't have any objection towards that at this.
There's no blood. There's no blood. Yeah, I think, which is more important.
I think it's like the gorier elements of death or the things that, like, because right now, like, my daughter sees that, she doesn't know what's happening, but like the gore is something that is like prehistorically, like, caveman brain. Like, I don't like that. Like, I'm adverse to seeing that. And I think that, you know, my daughter usually gets scared of the sharks and Finding Nemo, but, you know, we watched Mulan 2 times. And that's what Jeff was saying, is a parent movie. Cause anytime a new movie comes out like that, like, it's just, I'm running back Frozen 2 so many times since March. It's a breath of fresh air into the Disney Plus catalog. And it's, you know, it's something like if you have a 2-year-old or like 2.5-year-old like I do, the kid's not going to be captivated, but I don't think they should be terrified of it. At least mine wasn't. it just didn't like pique our interest like Puppy Dog Pals does. Like, I put on the episode of Puppy Dog Pals. Oh boy, she's glued to the TV screen.
Mm-hmm. It's easier to follow, I would say, than Mulan, perhaps.
Well, yeah, that's like made for, you know, that's for like a 10 to 11 year old, 12 year old, 13 year old kid. I mean, it's like more of a, you know, it's an epic fantasy movie.
Yeah.
We'll dive much more into Mulan and thoughts on it. And the critic and audience reviews are surprising. The whole thing is interesting, which is, I guess, not exactly what you'd want to hear us say if you're looking forward to the movie, because interesting isn't exactly a great selling point.
Ambitious.
Was it ambitious?
Maybe not.
It was ambitious in the sense that, you know, we're going to take out the best parts of the animated movie.
Yeah. And we're going to take out what you love and
just kind of see what happens. Like that was ambitious.
Other than that, anything before we get into our ad read, get into news?
Trill, did you watch the first three episodes of The Boys?
Oh, yeah. How was The Boys?
They're very, very good. Picked up right where it left off. Just as funny. Just as great action. And I was kind of scared because I thought they might have like blown their load a little bit in the first season. And they might not be able to recapture that same, like, I don't want to say magic, but whatever you want to call it. But they did. It's picked up right back up. It's great.
I watched the first episode, and you're right. I can't wait to finish the next two. I've been able to get to it. I've been kind of like busy family stuff. That's not a stunt, by the way. Like, just haven't had a chance to get to it. I would be worried about that too. But like, as I was watching it, especially like that, you know, I'm a spoiler. So if you haven't watched the first episode of The Boys of the new season, just fast forward 30 seconds. When they're having the funeral for the disappearing guy, like that was so hokey and cheesy and like, I think like on the nose in terms of like, kind of like, you know, this, I don't know, like superficiality to American pop culture almost, or like American hero worship. And like in a good way, I think that show is able to, you know, we talk about comic book movies a lot, but I think I don't know how to describe it, but it does hit like a very, very specific nail on the head in terms of highlighting like nerd culture and like, I don't know, just illuminating like how we, you know, kind of like fandoms. I don't know.
I think they do the best job of showing, I think, what America would be like if we were to actually have superheroes. Like, this is what would happen. They would be corralled into stables and, you know, monetized, marketed, you know, fucking shepherded around by these PR people to make sure they didn't say the wrong thing. This is how it would be. And they would all be psychopaths like they all are in The Boys. And boy, Trill, you're in for some stuff with Homelander. You're some good shit.
No, you articulated that exactly what I was thinking. It would be owned by a company. They would extract all the joy out of it. It would be a consumer product in the same way Oscar Mayer baloney is. So I think they nailed that on the head. They did it right. The release too. I was very happy. Me too. After like thinking about it a bit, because I know we went back and forth on like, is trickling episodes the thing to do or not, but it is the thing to do. It's more enjoyable.
They did this with Raised by Wolves too, which I watched, by the way, which is also pretty good. I think you might like a troll. And I like this idea where it's like they give you the three episode bump where it's like you get to do a little binge, right?
Yeah.
Do a little binge. And then you get back to the episodic format. I like that.
Well, you know, what I missed about pre-quarantine life is like my life had cadence. There was Watchmen on Sunday. There was Succession on Sunday. There was a, you know, Sunday Night Football rhythm on Sunday. Like there was something to look forward to. And I think that's one of the big reasons like we as a society miss sports so much is it gave us like milestones and things to look forward to, you know, during our jobs, which we may not like, or we may like, but at least like collectively it gave us something to look forward to. We don't have that, or we're getting that back. And we will have it soon, you know, maybe in a weird way, but like at least these shows like week to week, that gives me something to look forward to, which I enjoy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Take the podcast.
I haven't done it. I haven't watched it yet, but I am going to binge it soon.
No, you
like, I feel like I should binge the first season and then just catch up live. That's what I did for Succession and I fell in love with it. So
I'm 100% convinced like after four episodes of season one of The Boys, you're going to be doing like, your deep wiki dives, mm-hmm. and you know, whatever, ordering the comic book or the graphic novels. This is a show that I think you'd be very much into.
Yeah, I'm really surprised I haven't watched it. I also haven't watched Lovecraft County yet, or Country. I keep saying County.
Because you don't have Amazon Prime. You're the only man in America who does not have Amazon Prime.
Why? I haven't watched The Boys?
That's The Boys. Yep. That's it.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
That's why I haven't watched The Boys. You just...
Everyone knows we have HBO Max. We have HBO Max on so many of our streaming suggestions. People are like, are you in the pocket of big HBO? Maybe. Maybe we are.
There's no way you can do a movie podcast without, like, appearing to be in the pocket of somebody.
I selected 1 week 10 movies for streaming, and then I went and looked up all the locations before our web. By the way, movierankings.net user profile is coming soon. You can have your own watch list and movies you've watched, like a list for both. It's going to be great. No ranking movies yet, but that'll be soon. Nah, I'm not going to say soon. I'm not committing to that. But the user profiles is already a big thing that I said would never happen in the near future. And guess what? It's happening. We're also doing guest pick of the weeks. So we have Nick Tarani, our lovely coworker, has guest picks up there. But I did 10 movies once. Then I went and wrote down where they are, and they're all HBO Max, all 10 of them. I was like, oh.
I got the best catalog.
Have you noticed, though, that Netflix is up their game a little bit?
A little, yes. A little late. They have. There have been a couple, like, older, like, prestige good movies. You're like, oh, interesting. All right.
And then Disney's kind of like, they're starting to realize, like, we got to give them, like, not too old, but still, like, throwback movies. So I was, like, on Disney Plus, and Never Been Kissed is one of my suggestions on Disney Plus. I'm like, that's the perfect streaming movie. Like, I would have never thought about that movie ever again in my life had it not popped up right there. Now I want to watch it again.
I would like to be in the pocket of all of them.
It's something you do when you get older is you start going back to, like, people like Drew Barrymore to see how old they were and Never Been Kissed. Because, you know, when it came out, you were maybe 15 and she was, like, what, 25? And that 10-year age gap, you know, she may as well have been 55. And then you start to feeling really old again yourself because you're like, oh, Keanu Reeves was only 30 in you know, The Matrix or whatever. Oh, Jesus Christ. Like, I'm older than Keanu Reeves was in The Matrix. What was the one I sent you guys the other day? It was like, I'm older than, I forget.
Oh, you said, fuck.
I know you're talking about
Emilio Estevez in The Mighty Ducks. Is I watched D2 on Disney Plus and I'm like 4 years older than Emilio Estevez was in D2 or Mighty Ducks or one of them. Because as a kid, I'm like, that Gordon Bombay is a mature adult man.
It's true.
DUIs.
He did do DUIs. Maybe you get into major legal trouble and then you coach a youth sports team.
Disney was on one in the 90s. They're just like, hey, like, what if we fucking around and bought some sports teams in Anaheim? And then they're like, I don't like this.
Why not?
We weren't able to synergize these properly, so we're going to sell them.
All right, let's do an ad read. Good company, too. Mack Weldon. We talk about them a lot because they're, again, are a great company. The new normal uniform, that's the pandemic uniform, has a lot of us searching for nice dressed-up casual wear to have for our Zoom calls and such, and Mack Weldon can do that for you. And much more, because guess what? The casual stuff turns into great stuff for the outdoors. And for when you go out dining, eating, hanging out with friends, soft knit polos, tees, joggers, active shorts, whatever men's basics you need, Mack Weldon has you covered. Great comfort, great fit, and quality. Very high quality stuff, and it looks good. Dress it up, dress it down. Again, it looks great, feels great. They have great technology that's, you know, the air, the warm, the dry stuff through all elements. That's why you can wear it inside and outside. And they also have a loyalty program as well, free loyalty program called Weldon Blue. Get you free shipping for life. And then once you reach level 2 by spending $200, you get 20% off every order for the next year. Mack Weldon wants you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep it. And they'll still refund you. No questions asked. But they have so much more than underwear. They're joggers. They're travel bags. They're card holders. Everything is great there. And again, high quality too. The shit's not just going to fall apart. You get quality stuff for what you pay. And for 20% off your first order, try them out. Visit MackWeldon.com by entering promo code LIGHTS, and you get that 20% off. Enter promo code LIGHTS, LIGHTS, at MackWeldon.com, MackWeldon. That's MackWeldon.com/LIGHTS, promo code LIGHTS, LIGHTS, for 20% off. Mack Weldon, they're reinventing clothes at a time where you need to do that. James Bond, No Time to Die.
Dun, dun, dun,
5 years
dun,
after dun, the capture dun, 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 of Wolf, Bond has left the active service for the 400th time. He's fine. He's done again.
Done, mate. I'm fucking done with this shit, mate.
He's approached by Felix, a.k.a.
Fuck, it's Felix.
Jeffrey
Hello.
Leiter.
Hello,
Jeff, Jeffrey Wright.
Felix it's Jeffrey Leiter. Wright.
Felix Leiter, yes.
James Bond, I need you to take my money.
Oh, fuck, I've been out of the game for 2 years, chap.
Approached by Al Leiter. Friend and CIA officer who enlists his help in search for Valdo Obruchev, a missing scientist, when it becomes apparent that Obruchev was abducted.
You need Valdo, huh?
Obruchev, by the way, played by... That sounds like that's got to be the name of Ana de Armas' character, right? Nope.
No,
David Denchik. That guy's
that's
so far down the cast list. That's unbelievable.
You're telling me a female's going to be there, mate?
Bond must confront a danger the likes of which the world has never seen before. Just a refresher. And that danger is Safin by Rami Malek, the villain, who's some sort of eco-terrorist or something. That seems like that's been telephoned and translated so many different ways that no one really knows what it's about. I thought this was the best trailer yet.
Yeah.
I really liked it. And I don't know if it was because the music just really hit. The Bond music was the classic Bond music. I like the trailer. I like what we got here. I was thinking for a second, I'm like, I believe I like this movie more than – I like this trailer more than the ones for Spectre, which Spectre I really didn't like as a movie, which I believe most people feel the same way. And then I went back and I was like, maybe that's like – I don't know. Like, maybe I actually did like it. And I went back and I think it's a significantly better trailer than everything we got teased for Spectre. So I like what we got here. That's no guarantee whatsoever, but I'm optimistic.
I can't even describe to you what I think makes a good James Bond movie. I was thinking about
Casino Royale.
Yeah.
But Skyfall and Casino Royale are two very different movies.
But like even compare Casino Royale to Quantum of Solace, which some did the darker, grittier Daniel Craig. I think Casino Royale was like tighter and not as convoluted and not as bullshitty as Quantum of Solace was. That's for one. But something like Spectre versus Skyfall. I don't know. But the trailer looks good. I think what I'm trying to get at is like I think you could take any James Bond movie and make a pretty badass trailer out of it. It's tough to tell.
They've had forever to make a decent trailer, so I'm not like overly hyped up or impressed that they're able to do it with this giant delay. At the same time, I'm excited to just see it. It's hopefully a good closeout for James Bond, who said he'd rather like drag his balls through broken glass than do James Bond again. So, I don't know. I'm a big fan of basically every member of this cast. You guys know how I feel about Ana de Armas. Big fan of our little boy, Freddie Mercury. But I don't know, man. I just want to see it already. I'm sick of seeing here. I feel like we didn't hear about James Bond for like 5 months, and all of a sudden, like, yeah, fuck you, trailer.
Well, it's the Black Widow thing. It's yeah. they blew all through their marketing material, and they were like, well, fuck,
yeah,
it's not coming out now. So then they just have to kind of be quiet for a while.
Yeah, I mean, Mulan and James Bond were probably the two movies that were relatively the two big ones that were on the horizon. I still can't get over the fact that when we like Malek first got cast for James Bond, I think we said like they're probably going to give him a face scarf, some bullshit, and they did.
Mm-hmm. They gave him the Phantom of the Opera look.
Yeah,
yeah.
They gave him the like chemical burn type deal.
I feel like I don't really like him as a villain. The more and more I see more of his stuff, only because I feel like he's not very menacing. You know what I mean? He's a creepy. He's not menacing. I don't know how that translates to Bond villain, but maybe being different is something that the franchise needs.
I don't have enough information on it yet. I don't know. You might be right. At the same time, I think he could also like. So I don't want to say surprise us because he's a great actor, but I think he could do a good job too. I'm with Jeff though. The whole like eco villain is very like 1995. Like, what if people who want to save the planet are terrorists too?
Mm-hmm. Very so, cool, baby. I want Tom Cruise to take over for
James Bond.
Yeah, fuck it. That'd be so sick. Imagine if he had Ethan Hunt and James Bond under his belt.
I would want something that would piss British people off more. That
would be
though.
Tom Cruise, but no, but he does the British accent like from Austin Powers. Yeah, baby.
I think the villain was the major problem with Spectre, because I remember catching myself when Blofeld did the big reveal thing in his like lab or whatever, his like hideout, his headquarters. I just remember thinking, like, I don't fucking care. Like I just, he's like, I've been behind everything or whatever it was. Like, okay. I know you're Blofeld, like you're a very famous Bond character, but like, we just met you like 10 minutes ago. Like, I just don't care.
James Bond gets into a car with a ice cream paint job and he says, hello, I am Derofeld.
Oh my God.
That joke stunk.
That's fine. That's why I did it.
Bautista had a cool fight with James Bond. I remember in that, I think it was Spectre.
Yeah, in the
right?
train,
like,
right?
In the train, and he pulls him out with like the, yeah, he has a keg that like pulls him out of the train. That was sick. It was a good fight.
There are bits and pieces of it.
Good action, good entertainment. Just the story, I just became so like, it was kind of a fart. It was a gas. We like the word gassy fart. The story is kind of a gassy fart in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I am curious to see how they go with the new James Bond. Like what direction they go in? Do they go back? Do they go back to like? Are they going to do what like Batman's doing right now, where they make it, you know, maybe not like comical, but more noir or more like spy-ish or like 60s spy-ish or whatever.
Isn't that sort of what Casino Royale was, though? A little bit. Maybe not as much. Like, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, put it in like a period of the 60s. That'd actually be awesome, I think.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that would be kind of interesting if they did a James Bond period.
Because Casino Royale was that type of reset, right?
Casino Royale for me, and maybe the feeling of the reset was that we got a James Bond who was kind of a dumbass, or he just didn't have it figured out yet. He was like a newer James Bond and
brash rookie.
The big thing was him getting his ass kicked, which like just seeing James Bond getting his ass beat that much, like that was the big thing in the mid 2000s with like the grittier superheroes. It's like, hey, you want to see someone beat the fuck out of Batman? Okay, like that's cool, and they did it with James Bond too, which I liked. You know, it humanizes a superhero-ish type character. I think that's fine to do. I just I don't know what the trend is necessarily, because I don't even know how to describe the new Batman, because it's certainly not what they're doing with the Nolan movies. But it appears that it has its own vibe, which at the same time is like just as serious yet more styled, I guess, more stylish. So maybe that's what they do with Casino Royale, but it would be very, I don't think they would ever do it. Like go back to the 60s.
Go back to the 40s, make him an OSS travel agent. That would be sick. Almost like Kingsman or something.
Yeah, or
the Kingsman, I guess.
They would never do that, because they got to get their big product tie-ins. Like they got to come up with a reason, like Heineken's around in 1814, yep, which maybe it was. I don't know.
1814, Christ.
we're going back that
really
far.
Old spot.
They're just going to make James Bond like Assassin's Creed.
Oh, say, that'd be
like,
amazing.
James Bond runs in the bloodline, and they
put Altair.
They put people in the James Bond animus, and like you go back and you know, essentially like your
I'm Sir Yeoman
Pontius Pilate was James Bond. He's got a bad rap or whatever.
You're the fucking V for Vendetta guy, or whatever, that Guy Fawkes. Like all this, yeah. You're all. That would actually be amazing. I would love to see that movie. You go, who's going to be the animus, like the young James Bond that doesn't know he's related to him?
Colin Firth.
No, he's too old. It needs to be someone young.
Fine.
Like,
it's fine.
It needs to be someone younger. Who's a young British, like, who plays Q in
one of
these?
One of the incarnations of
Ben Winshaw. Pencil pusher guy.
Ben Winshaw, yeah. Right? Him.
Yeah. Hey, Bond. One of like Bond's like incarnations is like just someone who like lives till they're 24 in the Middle Ages and dies of dysentery.
The guy who plays Q in the new Bonds has the tiniest voice of all time. Like, it's not high pitch. It's just, it's a very small voice.
He was the dad in Mary Poppins, no? Winshaw?
He was, yes. The Mary Poppins where Lin-Manuel and friends did BMX tricks in the middle of the movie.
Oh my God, what a fucking absurd movie that was. I feel so bad for what's her name, because like she does so good in Mary Poppins. Just everything else was like, what the fuck, man? Why do BMX tricks in the middle of a Mary Poppins period piece movie? Christ.
I think that's a movie that is we're going to point back to in like 20 years and be like, that feels very 2010-ish.
Yes. Yes, for sure. That, yep.
The BMX tricks will be the, yeah, that'll be the difference.
I think they should just cast Carl Urban as James Bond.
Oh, he'd be sick as James Bond. But clean shaven, I don't like him now as much as I like him bearded because of the boys. Because
we need a, like a 48-inch chest, 34-inch waistline, thick boy, Zangief-looking James
Bond.
What
about like
that's not Carl Urban.
Like larger Bond, like a bigger Bond.
Like so obese Bond?
I want like a 5'7" otter.
Yeah.
You guys want, okay, so you want like a, not a hedgehog. What's that? Like honey badger. You want a honey badger.
What's that guy's face from Fantastic Beasts? Fucking.
Oh, oh my God.
Dan Fogelberg.
Dan Fogelberg.
Fogelberg's a singer.
Dan Fogelberg.
A thick James Bond who's like this super sneaky, athletic, thick guy, like the dude who runs
like a rugby player
at the minor league games. Have you seen that? The bigger guy who's like fast as hell.
Yeah. Like your rugby player, I think, is what you're looking for.
Yeah, I need a tank Bond. He doesn't even like fit into suits, so he just wears Patagonia baggy shorts.
He can't fit in anything. He just like a little flex and everything rips.
He dresses like Kevin Smith.
But they just got like Jay Cutler, not their bodybuilding Jay Cutler.
Yeah, the
to be the new James Bond. He's got the look.
Mission Impossible 7. They set up this big fucking jump, and Christopher McQuarrie tweeted out a picture. They're gonna do this giant stunt for Tom Cruise to just jump off of, right?
On what's he gonna be on though?
He was on a bike. It already happened. The video released. And he jumped off the cliff with his motorcycle and then parachuted down into a canyon. And honestly, not one of the crazier stunts he's done
Hunt. Like, that's an insane fucking stunt for any other actor in the world to do. That's like his third most dangerous stunt that he's done.
Yeah, that's just not like, I'm not saying that's crazy difficult, but someone's like, are we sure that's him? Like, I'm very confident that has to be him because that's not even the craziest shit he's done. It's crazy.
106 Halo jumps. He did the helicopter stunt where he was hanging on a wire. He literally drove the helicopter.
I mean,
put it to like a whatever spiral where it's like only like 20 pilots in the world could get out of.
Yeah, that will forever be the most, like him on the side of the plane was crazy, but he did have a harness. Like him doing the barrel roll fucking spiral dive into a canyon on a helicopter. Mm-hmm. That's the fucking most insane shit. So, like, this is very cool. Don't worry. I mean, don't get me wrong. This Mission Impossible 7 will be as hyped as I've been probably for anything outside of, like, The Force Awakens and Endgame and Infinity War. Because at Mission Impossible side, it's a next-level action movie. Like, the follow-up for this is going to be crazy. So I'm pumped to see it, but I feel like we're selling my guy Tom Cruise short a little here. This is not even that crazy. I bet he's got a crazier one up his sleeve for this movie.
I bet. Space soon, so.
Yeah, I bet they're drawing something up. That did like make my balls kind of retract into my body when I saw that jump. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't even imagine. I couldn't imagine like building it.
No, God, no. The scaffolding.
I don't know. This whole Tom Cruise doing stunts thing. First off, I think Tom Cruise is a maniac. Not a, you know, in this way, it's a good way. But I also think that it's the best marketing for the Mission Impossible franchise for people who are already sold on the Mission Impossible franchise, for people like us returning, this is retention because it's built in now. Like the expectation that Tom Cruise is going to do his own stunts is built in. And the fact that we're already talking about, this doesn't look all that crazy compared to his past ones. Like we're actively rooting for Tom Cruise to inch closer and closer to a higher probability of death. Mm-hmm. Tom Cruise is okay with that. That's what he's giving back to us as fans.
I still think the highest so far danger skit has to be the barrel roll, like you were saying before. But I also think that now when he does the Doug Liman space movie, the what?
You said dangerous skit. So I just imagine like improv set with knives.
The most dangerous stunt. That's the most dangerous stunt. But when the Doug Liman movie where he's going to actually go to space, that's going to be then his bar, and he's never going to be able to exceed that. So now I'm kind of almost afraid for that. So everything else won't look as cool.
Space is scary, but you have to wonder, like, I don't know, you know, like Was he, what's the extent of the stunts he can do? It's like the jumps from like low orbit, like Felix Baumgartner. Like
I'm rooting for the space thing to stink. Like, no offense to Tom Cruise. I don't want that. I don't want any of that to like sully the Mission Impossible. I want that away from Mission Impossible. Like, I hope it's not cool and people are like, nah, Mission Impossible's still the GOAT. Still prefer this franchise. You're right. That's always been the best marketing. Those stunts. I mean, if you ask Tom Cruise, I'm sure he said this in an interview, him breaking his leg filming that last one was great press for that movie.
Yeah. You know, it was at the bottom of that canyon, a new showing for Tenet. He had to get down there as quick as possible so that he could watch it.
Back to the movies. Have videos. All right. That's Mission Impossible. It looks cool, though. I'm excited.
This is kind of replaced the comic book movies for me, but both Mission Impossible and John Wick. I think I've been thinking about it, and I feel like there's the culmination of the Endgame Infinity War that they've yet to buy me into comic book movies again, which is fine. It's totally what they're doing with the strategy, and I think honestly, the Black Widow thing getting pushed back and people just getting a break.
It's been a year and a half since a Marvel movie, almost.
Mm-hmm. I think that's good though, because you know, Taylor Swift, right? Most times she'll come out and she'll release an album and then she'll do a tour and she'll have like a 2.5-3 year cycle and you won't hear from her for like a year. Or like artists are like that a lot because of overexposure. And I think that's the way Marvel movies were, so that, you know, we're getting a palate cleanser right now. And I think ultimately Marvel is going to benefit from that. But in my mind, like, until those come back or whatever, and they bought me into this next phase and what they're doing, which I'm sure they will. I'm not doubting that they won't. I think the better thing is that these action movies, these new great American action movies, American in the sense that, you know, they're McQuarrie's not exactly American, but you know, they're like Tom Cruise is in it and Keanu Reeves. What's that?
What is he, Canadian? I thought he was American.
I thought McQuarrie is British.
No, he's definitely either American or Canadian, or as just speaks in a American sounding accent.
Yeah, I mean, if he's not from, I'm pretty sure he's from like the Northeast.
Yeah, I'm an idiot.
Yeah, he's from New Jersey. He's from New Jersey.
Well, I mean, so a lot of people in New York think New Jersey is like the England of.
I'm there right now, and I'll tell you that's just untrue.
I don't know why I thought that.
All right. Interesting spin.
It sounds like a British name, though. I'll give you that.
That's fine. I'll be
British
wrong.
Scottish.
But these have replaced. I look forward to these more than any other movie now, I think.
I've never dressed up for a Marvel movie. I dressed up like fucking Henry Cavill to go see Mission Impossible. I mean, like, that's my fanboy shit.
We have
that was a bit.
No, it wasn't. No, I was fanboying.
We have it. No, I mean, like, I was actually surprised we didn't have it higher. Our combined rating of the movie has it at the fifth best action movie of all time, and I like very comfortably will defend that.
Oh, easily. That's so easy. Oh, it's such
for you. I think you have. I think for you, it's higher. No, you it's lower. You it's at seven.
It's incredible.
And then mine. I think I have it
up there with like the rate and shit. Yeah.
For me, it's behind Seven Samurai, Mad Max Fury Road, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Terminator 2, Inception, and then the Terminator. And then you have it.
Like, different tier, I feel like, than like traditional action movies like Mission Impossible. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you have it just below Die Hard, Terminator, Enter the Dragon, Mad Max Fury Road, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and Seven Samurai.
Sounds right.
Well, I certainly, action movies, I think, are very dependent on when you see them as well. Like, if you were to show a 12-year-old now, like, T2, and then show him Mission Impossible Fallout, like, Mission Impossible Fallout's going to go on his list in terms of, like, top five action movies by the time he's 35.
Yeah,
it's just that's, you know, what's relevant. But I hope these continue until Tom Cruise is 70.
Me too.
Which is going to be like in what, 15 years?
Ooh, no, they'll do though. They'll retire him. He'll become the new whatever head of the Mission Impossible team, and then they'll have somebody else
come in. I hate to even start thinking about that, but you know, there's been some discussions at the studio, like. I don't know. You almost do you keep him in as like the head of something, or do you just like reboot the franchise, or do you retire the franchise?
I think he's the head of the IMF, and then you roll him in for an admission at the end.
You know what you do? You know what you do? You hand him the reins as director, and he's also in the movie in a
you know, is like head of the IMF. But I think like I think you give him a shot at directing one of these motherfuckers at some point.
He'd love that, I'm sure.
I don't know if you want, but like him and McCrory are such a fucking duo now. I mean, they do everything together. They even did that PSA about changing your TV. Remember they did that like the defense of TVs? They're like, change that fucking setting.
Did they do American Man together, or am I making that up?
Yeah, he's too good of a bro to edge McCrory out like that.
We will talk about him. We'll talk about a role Tom Cruise has played before, though, in a minute. It's recast for a Amazon thing. Yes. Most guys, Addery time, most guys have tried different ways to last longer, but thinking about, what are you going to pick today? What are you thinking about? VC bucks?
Motorcycle jumps.
VC coins on 2K games?
I'm thinking about the new 2K and the story mode, which a pivotal scene in your decision to drop out of college comes from your girlfriend breaking up with you, and I'm not making this up.
Oh.
Game fucking sucks.
The folks at Roman, an online men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes, the secret to longer-lasting sex. Roman Swipes are a clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, and fast-acting, but don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in discreet, unmarked packaging, and each swipe packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for whenever you need it. They're easy to use. Take the swipes out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry. You're good to go. That is it. Go to GetRoman.com/lice. You can get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. That's GetRoman.com/lice.
It is funny that in the last in like the last 8 years, Tom Cruise has really only worked with three directors, McCrory, Lyman, and Kaczynski. Or no, I don't think – what is it? It's not Kaczynski. It's
Ted Kaczynski.
It's Joseph Kosinski. I want to be clear, when you say Kaczynski, when I say it like that, it heavily implies that Tom Cruise is being directed by the Unabomber, which he's not.
Is that not the case, sir?
No, dude, but I actually would like to see that now.
Is he alive or did they execute him?
I don't know if he got the death penalty.
I don't even know how many people killed. I just know he's famous. Prison.
I think he killed like three
people. He's 78. He's in Chicago still.
All right. Yeah, just chilling. He was just at the Sports Authority. That was seven floors.
8 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Is that bad?
Ooh, he was an eco-terrorist too, wasn't he?
Sounds tough.
I'm pretty sure he was. I think he was an eco-terrorist actually, right? I might be making that up. I'm pretty sure he had something to do with it though.
I don't know. I don't know much about the Unabomber other than the fact that I feel like Jay Leno made a lot of jokes about him, despite like, you know, him being on the lam at the time, which mm-hmm. if someone was known for sending bombs through the mail, I wouldn't personally want to joke about them on TV.
Mm-mm. I would pass on that for sure.
Yeah. Don't tell Jay what to joke about, what not to joke about.
Jay's like, fuck it. I'm not screening my own mail.
Yes. You guys hear about this Unabomber guy? He's got these aviator shades on.
Funny thing about him is my assistants opened my mail. The Comeback Trail with Robert De Niro, Tommy Lee Jones, more. It's another Olds movie.
Minus Zach Braff and Emile Hirsch.
Yeah, Zach Braff, Eddie Griffin, Emile Hirsch. Every year or so, they conjure up one of these movies. It's actually a remake, ironically enough, a remake mm-hmm. of a movie. Wild by dogs. The same name.
It's the first thing I thought when I saw it.
Every year or so, they come up with another one of these. There was what? Last Vegas was one of them.
Bad Grandpa. Red.
No, Bad Grandpa is not the same thing.
Hey.
The Bucket List was a big one.
Bucket List was good, though. Let's not Last fuck Vegas, with the Bucket List.
No, Going in Style was another one. That was Alan Arkin, Morgan Freeman.
Book Club.
Also, Michael Caine.
Well, maybe Book Club.
Book Club counts. It's just gals.
Yeah. Well, there was some.
Well, what it is it's this whole genre of older boomers saying you still got something left in the tank. That's what these mm-hmm. movies are about. Like you may be getting older, but you can still fuck. You can still move down to the villages in Florida, hang a loofah from your golf cart, and just swing with the best of them. So don't count yourself out.
What do you think the lowest rated Craig T. Nelson movie is on MovieRankings.net?
It has to be one of these movies, but I don't know which one it would be.
It's a Get Hard with Kevin Hart and Will Ferrell.
Ouch.
He was the father, I think, of Allison Brie's character, if I recall correctly.
Oh yeah, wasn't Alison Brie like the? He set him up, right?
Correct.
He set Will Ferrell up. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, this whatever. I don't. A film producer in debt to the mob finances a badly written Western movie in hopes of the production killing its aging star.
That's Tommy Lee Jones, the aging star. I kind of dig this for a few reasons, only because one, I don't think we ever really got to see Morgan Freeman as like a comedy type bad guy, which I think is cool for him. Eddie Griffin, I love, and I've always loved him since I think my first introduction to him would be Chappelle Show as a kid. And the When I Leave Come Together Like Butt Cheeks from Grits and Gravy in the World Championship of Dice. Hilarious skit. I like the idea of – I think Robert De Niro has like better comedic chops than people give him credit for. Like, he's still not great, but I think he is better than what people give him credit for. And I like the idea of him as a con man. And I think that this role specifically for Tommy Lee Jones is like perfect because this is him. It's like the guy who doesn't like any nonsense whatsoever. It's the I won't sanction your buffoonery, but that's just his character now.
You know, Zach Braff, here's the thing about Zach Braff. He had an oversized impact on the 2000s for his actual yes. like level of contribution.
Yes.
And I enjoy Zach Braff, but that just goes to show you Scrubs was a great show, but Scrubs was a collection of like, you know, Beginley and Faison and other people on the show and Braff as well. But like everybody, a whole ensemble of that cast of Scrubs was fantastic. Zach Braff did Garden State. Okay.
That's you maybe even generous to describe Garden State.
I'm sure he's a nice guy. It's just he's like very 2000s. Like he was the I don't know.
Comp, but whenever I see him, I think Josh Radnor, only because I think sitcom faces that I don't particularly think are really strong leads but did good in the show in their respective role. But Josh Radnor was just in that show, the Amazon Prime One Hunters, and he was awesome, and that was also set in the 70s.
He was the e-boy of the 2000s. Zach Braff was the first e-boy.
Sure, now he's dating Florence Pugh. Good for him.
That's right, I forgot about that.
That is correct.
This is a movie that's coming out. I got nothing else on it. I was like, oh, trailer. We're in the rundown.
The comeback trail. There could be a porn named that.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? These types of movies, though, they're going to continue making them as boomers, you know, still.
I forgot about Book Club, though. I forgot about the Craig T. Nelson boner movie.
Book Club. I got a boner.
It was a horny movie. And finally, Amazon. They cast so this classic confusion. Some people confuse Jack Ryan, Jack Reacher. Jack Reacher, totally different character. Jack Reacher, they've cast Alan Ritchson as Jack Reacher.
Blue Mountain State, baby.
Jack Reacher, they said never go back, and it's true. Tom Cruise never went back.
He did, yes. He played
Thad Castle, right?
Thad Castle. Blue Mountain State, a show that I have never watched. I know some people are going to be very upset to hear that. I know, but it's a show I never watched, and I never knew anyone that watched it personally. But I knew a lot of people, like, I had people tweet about it and shit. I never had a friend who was like, I watched the latest Blue Mountain State. But I know people fucking love it.
I wouldn't call it must watch, but it's entertaining in a very crude based way. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I know for a fact people like it. I just never knew anyone who like was a huge fan.
I like the concept of it too. Just the fact that a backup quarterback wants to remain a backup just because he hates the idea of having to do work as a starter. He's like, yeah, fuck it. Backup quarterback's the best job in the world.
Backup quarterback, like Jim Sorgi. Remember him?
Yeah.
I think
Peyton Manning's backup for what felt like 8 seasons. But, you know, that's the best job.
Jim Sorge is a big reason why the Browns didn't make the playoffs. You know, they went 10-6 because they decided to bench Peyton Manning because in the second half of a Sunday night game, and then Vince Young and the Titans got in. Or Kerry Collins.
What happens, man? Sorge could have been it. Could have been the guy to succeed Manning. Could have been the one. Colts just didn't see it that way. But yeah, because even if Manning goes out, nobody expects anything of you. Like being a backup quarterback to somebody like
you know, like if you're the Tennessee Titans backup quarterback, you know, there's a chance. There's like, okay, maybe Tannehill can't do it again this season. You got to go in. People are like, we're counting on you. Whereas like if you're backing up Aaron Rodgers goes out, you're just boned.
It's like Charlie Batchelor with Steven. We're just like, yeah, we know you're there. We know you can fill a gap, but we're not expecting Roethlisberger to go down anytime in the next 10 years.
All right. Or are we going to watch Jack Reacher? I'm not. I never got into Jack Ryan.
The guy who wrote Jack Reacher, I think, hates the movies because Tom Cruise is short, right? Like, that's his chief complaint?
Yes. I know that the idea that he was short. Wait, who wrote him? Who wrote Jack Reacher? Wasn't it fucking – we just talked about him the other day.
I have no clue. Not Patterson or any of those guys.
Michael Scarn.
No, we didn't. It's something – it's a popular – Lee Child.
Yeah,
he doesn't like that he's a short man.
I dig the Jack Reacher movies. I look at them like they're like spinoffs of Mission Impossible. It's just the Mission Impossible light. It's just Tom Cruise beating up people at a bar and being like, bet you didn't see that coming, did you?
Yeah, all you need is Tom Cruise in a brown leather jacket, and that's there you go, Jack Reacher.
I like them. They're cool.
Versus
cool
Mission Impossible, where he wears a black leather jacket.
It's
important to differentiate.
I just don't think I'll watch it.
Why Alan Richardson?
Himself diving in.
Yeah.
No offense against Alan Richardson at all, but like, why him? Because now I think I associate now Tom Cruise with this role, and I feel like they're just like not even close to being the same type of actor. Not even seem like stratosphere. Not like quality wise, but just like stylistically. I don't view Alan Richardson as badass. I just view him as physically large.
Thad Castle fandom, stand up. This episode brought to you in part by Upstart. That's right. I'm about to do a review of Mulan. Actually, no, we're doing an interview first. But first, Upstart. During these economically turbulent times, everyone's looking for a way to feel more financially secure. So if you're still needlessly throwing money every month at high interest credit card debt, it's time you checked out Upstart, the revolutionary online leading platform that knows you're more than just a credit score. Now is the time to find out how low your Upstart rate can be to help pay off high interest credit card debt. Unlike other lenders, Upstart can reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. You don't need a degree or diploma to apply, though. Upstart lets you skip going to the bank because it's completely online. They offer loans from $1,000 to $50,000 so you can consolidate your debt into one easy fixed rate payment. Upstart makes it fast, simple to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept your rate and proceed with your application. The best part, if the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high interest credit card debt and get back to using your money your way. See why Upstart has a 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/lights to find out how low your Upstart rate can be. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/lights. Your loan amount will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. All applicants will qualify for the full amount.
We are very pleased to be joined by Pauly Shore. How are you doing? How's it going?
Good, buddy. We're just trying to get the vibe get the vibe out there on this crazy comedy that everyone's we're promoting it. So
We love talking comedies, and we're gonna get into it, especially get into just the idea of the type of comedy this is and the type of comedies released nowadays too in comparison. But Guest House is the movie on VOD September 4th. I believe I have that correct, the date. You first starring role in 10 years? Is that
probably more than that? I mean,
pretty fascinating. Is that a And let me read the synopsis real quick for those who don't know. Guest House, newly engaged couple finds the home of their dreams, but it quickly becomes a nightmare when the previous owner's friends continue squatting in their guest house. Leads to a turf war that ultimately ruins their house, their marriage, their lives. You, Amy Tiard, and Steve-O, Billy Zane, Bobby Lee, Chris Kattan, Mike Castle. VOD September 4th. What do you want to tell the people about Guest House? You kind of gave it a little bit of a teaser in the beginning.
I mean, it's to simplify it, you know, Pauly Shore is in the army, Pauly Shore is in the biodome, Pauly Shore is in the guest house. So, you know, it's a big, you know, cut to, you know, late 40s, 50 year old Pauly Shore, you know, more fucked up than before. You know, he's got a beard. He's kind of like a cross between the Dude and Zach Galifianakis. And he's just kind of living back there. And there's a reason why, you know, that he's partying so hard and, you know, he doesn't want to get kicked out. So it's kind of like War of the Roses or like, you know, what about Bob, you know, type vibe. And it's, you know, but it's raunchy. It's kind of American Pie meets The Hangover tone. If you like those type of movies. So, you know,
I remember when I watched the trailer for this, it's a super Red Band trailer, by the way. I mean, that's like the definition of Red Band. So you get the vibe right off, even if you just watch the trailer for how raunchy it is. But we just said first, and you said probably over 10 years, that big of a gap for a leading role, is it as easy to slip back into it as you would have thought, into that big of a, like a spot in a movie, or maybe a little adjustment all these years later?
You know, starring in movies is like, for me, is like surfing. You know, I was so good at an I was so good at an early age of starring in films that once I slipped back into it, developing the script, helping with production, pre-production, shooting it, I was able to slip back in. It took me a couple of days to get kind of adjusted to it, but you know, I was in Maui for quarantine, and I hadn't surfed in fucking 15 years at least. And it took me a day or two to get it back. But, you know, it's a muscle. You know, starring in movies is a muscle that I'm used to because I did it so many times. So I kind of know what to do once I got in there. But I agree, it was a little bit of a challenge. But I was able to you know, orchestrate. Because it's very different than just being in a movie. If you star in a movie, you're carrying the whole thing. And it's I look at the film with several eyeballs, you know, so you have to be sensitive to everyone's job and what's going on. You know?
Is that, do you prefer that leading side of things, or do you prefer maybe a background character or something on the side? Cause we've heard that now and then from different people we've talked to, where it's like, yeah, leading role, very cool, but that's not my speed.
I think I'm good with whatever the role is in that particular film. You know, if it's a cameo and Entourage, you know, and a couple scenes in that, that's cool. If it's, you know, a small part and, you know, third lead, that's cool. And for this particular movie, I think it fits for me to be the lead in it.
One thing about this movie I noticed, and it's like, for me, whenever I watch a movie, I pick out whenever I see food that looks good. I pick out whenever I see like a landscape that looks cool, and always when the real estate is cool. I thought this house looked awesome. And it got me thinking, if there was one, you could be the permanent house guest, like your character in Guest House. You could be the permanent house guest at anyone in the world's house. Who would it be?
Ooh, that's a good one. I mean, I'm such a huge fan of Sean Penn, but Sean Penn, the actor and the director. So maybe Sean Penn, but these days he's a little wild. So I don't know. I'd have to say, that's a good question. Maybe Barack Obama. I think that would be cool.
Oh, I wonder what his house even looks like.
I like him. I think he's cool. So I think
probably a fairly safe house too. I feel like if you get the house, gotta imagine security. Yeah, that's
cool. I don't think you could probably couldn't fuck around on the same level with secret security around though. That would be a little bit tougher.
But the thing to me, Obama seems like the kind of guy that he, you know, he's got a conservativeness. But I think he also lets loose, you know. His wife is pretty wild, you know. She seems like pretty, you know.
You play around a little bit for sure.
You know, she has a good time.
Who do you think was a better house guest, your character in Guest House or Kato Kaelin? Got to pick one.
Oh man, I have to say I probably my character. I'd have to probably say my character because I had a dick pipe.
That's true.
You're the
dick bong.
Yeah, I had the dick bomb. That was something that the director, Sam, came up with, you know, and it was interesting because when he offered me the movie, I'm like, this guy's not that likable. And, you know, I got to like soften this guy up. So Sam, you know, gave me some, he let go of my leash a little bit. And I was able to kind of like go in there and try to make this guy a little bit more, I don't know, relatable, likable. And, you know, even at the end, I don't know if you guys saw it, but at the end, it's got like a nice message and it turns into kind of like, you know, the Pauly Shore movie that people remember, you know, where there's always like a message and it's kind of sweet. And we find out there's a reason why this guy's going crazy in the backyard, you know?
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that the Pauly Shore movie that people know, and we go back to your older movies and we just talk about in general, and we talk about this all the fucking time. are the difference between just the eras of comedies and how different comedy is nowadays. And like we just talked, again, throwback, we just talked about the new Bill and Ted the other day as well. Like these are movies like that just feel like they're from a different era, different generation. For you, like comedy, it just becomes so different. Not to say that they're bad, but just comedy movies are so much different. And the answer we usually get is the studio thing. They're like, studios are just different nowadays. They don't buy into comedies like they used to. Is there another element outside of that, you think, where movies like, again, Guest House, movies like, again, you have the other movies that are coming out on demand streaming. Is there maybe something at play other than the fact that studios are just buying more into the big blockbusters, why comedies are so different looking than they were 10, 20, 15 years ago?
I think it's just the way of the world, and it's the changing of the tides. And a lot of people, you know, you do these like Marvel movies. You do, you know, these sequels. It's very safe. It's not, you know, you're not, you know, it's I think it's more of a numbers game. They just see what they did. Spider-Man did previously this. We're going to just boom, 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 boom. And I think it's safe. And I think, you know, I mentioned Bernie Brillstein. He was the best kind of producer manager back in the day. You know, there's not a lot of kind of producers, managers that create stuff that's, you know, kind of, you know, outside the box, you know. And that's what's cool about this film is that it is kind of a throwback, you know, coming into an era that is not throwback. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see the cultures collide and see how, you know, but I also think that the younger generation is very smart. And I also think that the younger generation is very kind of, I don't want to say dirty, but they have look at Twitter, you look at YouTube. I mean, it's gnarlier now than it was when I was starting off, you know? So I think they might take to this, you know, especially with Steve-O in it. And, and you got, you know, Bobby Lee, who's very famous right now, and Eric Griffin, who's got a big audience. And, you know, these are the guys that are the hot guys right now. So, you know, I'm excited for, you know what I'm really excited for? I'm excited for the kids, you know, like a younger, you know, in the 20s to watch the film, and they discover my character, this crazy guy in the back of the guest house. He's got a beard. He just looks all disheveled. And, you know, they know Steve-O, but who the fuck is this fucking weirdo in the back? And then the parents are going to be like, that's Pauly Shore. And they're going to be like, who the fuck is Pauly Shore? And they're like, let me educate you. Come over here on my VHS copies over in this section of the house. And then I think what's going to happen is my hope is that the parents are going to educate the younger generation, Biodome, Encino Man, Son-in-Law, The Army, all my stuff on YouTube. And I think the parents are going to say, this is the guy that started this shit. And because I did, I started that era, you know, right around when Sandler started it. And Jim Carrey and Chris Farley and these guys. So hopefully, you know, there'll be a passing of baton from the older generation to the younger generation, introducing them to who the hell I am.
You do see that a lot nowadays, like just like with streaming services in general too. Like so many things are bingeable and easy to access. And I mean, like, I know some humor and some art doesn't transfer over decades and eras, but funny is funny, right? Like if it's funny, it's still going to play for a while as long as it's timely. And most of that comedy that you mentioned, yeah.
Yeah, I like, you know, just like you said, it's timely. I mean, I like movies like Stir Crazy, you know, with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor and movies like, what are some other, I mean, What About Bob? A great film with Bill Murray and all these. So yeah, you're right. You know, I saw Biodome, two months ago. I hadn't seen it in years. And I'm like, fuck, this thing's actually really funny. Like, we don't give a fuck. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're just going for it, you know? And that's what type of actor I am. You know, you want to work with Pauly Shore, you better be ready to hold on, because I go, you know, and when the camera says action, I might not go to the place that we rehearsed, but I'm going somewhere. Let's go. You know what I mean?
So unfortunately, we have another co-host. I want to get to this one. We have a co-host. This is our real job. this is his side job. So he has a real job somewhere else. He wasn't able to get out of his meetings today. But he has a story involving you from years ago. It's one of the first things he ever told in this podcast. We made it 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago. And he sent an apology to you. Now I want to read the apology to you. This is what he said. Notes.
What's his name?
He's anonymous online. His name is Trill. So that's what we're going to refer to him as, Trill. Dear Paul.
You ever see that movie, Don't Fuck With Cats?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So
is he the fucking cocksucker in that movie?
we might be.
Yeah. No, we don't fuck with it.
I know. Don't wait. Don't fuck with Trill, bro.
We have to add that to our intro now.
He said, Dear Paulie, I'm sorry I couldn't join today's interview, but wanted to issue the following apology. A decade or so ago, you did a show in Louisville at a club in 4th Street Live. After the show, you were walking through a bar, Sully's, and I was very drunk and said something along the lines like, I love you, Pauly Shore. In retrospect, I don't know what you do when a drunk asshole 24-year-old says that to you in passing. I apologize for putting you in that position. Signed, Trill.
There's no apology taken. What happens when people see me in public and they're drunk, this thing comes out where they just have to like scream my name or scream weasel or attack me, you know what I mean? And it's okay. It's out of love, you know? So that's why I live in a gated community.
So no Trills drunkenly walk by and yeah.
Get into your property.
No, I don't find that. I'm not sorry that happens. That's very common. It'd be weird for me to walk through a bar and have people not scream out stuff to me. You know, it's kind of like a Dave Attell. He did the bar show where he's like getting fucked up all the time. And then he goes to bars and people don't buy him drinks would be weird, you know? So it's all good. Tell Trill I love him and thank you so much, you know?
Now that's years. So that's 11 years ago. So he's going to...
Been on his mind a lot.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny is I think I remember that moment.
Good. That's good. I'd like to hear that. He's going to be sad. That'll make his life. He told us like the first story he told in this podcast. We were talking about encounters with people in movies. He's like, God, he was on the biggest fucking Pauly Shore fan. And I think I just embarrassed myself so bad one time.
It's just for me, you know, to be honest, for me, it's like, you know, all joking aside, it's like, you know, I've been doing this for, you know, what I started my 20, I'm 20. So that's 20. That's 30 years I've been doing this. And I'm just so grateful that whatever it is that I did in my career and in my movies and my stand-up and my podcasting, people enjoy it. And that's really what keeps me going. And that's part of the reason why I'm single, you know, is because my heart and my soul, you know, is into my, you know, making people happy. Even my mom said, you know, don't settle down. Like, you know, like, because art, she says that it stifles the artist when you're married and you're, you know, and you have that. And I agree with her. I don't agree with her. Obviously, you have to find the right fit. But part of the reason that keeps me going is guys like your friend Trill, you know, to scream out in the middle of a bar, hey, I fucking love you. Like, that's pretty awesome. You know, that's pretty awesome. So I'm not mad.
We talked recently about MTV VJs, which you do know a fair amount about. And MTV
Whoa,
is...
Oh, check out a video because it's going to be mate. Sure, bro. Billy Idol, rock the cradle of... Ah, 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 ah.
Still got right. It, man. That's crazy.
They should call me. They brought back the Jersey Shore. Why don't they fucking bring back Hollywood?
Right?
Well, exactly. So that's what I want to ask. So MTV is... MTV is not just different from the VJ days. MTV is different from like 5 years ago. MTV shows, they show ridiculousness. And then that's it. It's just on 20 hours a day, and then they slot in like one Jersey Shore episode and like one other thing here and there. Mm-hmm. Could MTV or something like that ever make a comeback nowadays? Obviously, you kind of know why, because like you can just go on YouTube and look up any music video of all time. But it's like it's crazy. It goes viral every time MTV tweets out their schedule for the week, and it's like Tuesday, 24 hours of ridiculousness. It's like, wow, like this network is – even different from the like early 2000s. It's
just hey,
so
you know
crazy.
What? Maybe when Guest House, since Guest House is my big comeback movie, you know what I mean? Because who would ever thought that Pauly Shore would have a big comeback like this? This is a pretty big deal for me. Maybe once we get the views and we get the knock on wood, the enthusiasm, then MTV will call me back. I'll come in the doors and then I'll save MTV. You know what I mean? I can reprogram that channel and they can, you know, get behind that. You know what I mean? And we can do start off. We can go back to the original vibe, you know, on it. Bring back TRL, you know, all that.
Yeah.
Shit. I love TRL.
Get Pauly Shore making a comeback. We got Bill and Ted come back. The timing is ripe for MTV to come back and start showing you the music videos again, like making that an experience.
I got the name of the show, but it's not going to be called Totally Pauly. I got the new name.
Oh, yeah. What's the name?
Totally Crusty Pauly, bro. And I'm not going to be wheezing the juice. I'm wheezing the prune juice.
No, it's perfect. Tell you what, they would get a boost overnight. A huge on MTV.
They would. They would. Before we wrap on Guest House here, reminder, September 4th, that's
tomorrow.
Holy shit, yeah. That's out already because it's airing Sunday. It's already out. So make sure you go.
It's out. Yeah, it's out. That. Labor Day weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which is you need something to do on Labor Day weekend.
You know what? I'll tell you where people can find it because people are like, well, is it on Netflix? Where is it? Blah, blah, blah. So it's basically, it's on Apple TV, Amazon, AT&T, Bell TV, DirecTV, Fandango, Frontier Airlines.
Oh,
Google Play, I did not know Google that was a network to go to.
Redbox, Vudu, Sony. It's everywhere. It's all over VOD. So
where'd you go? I went to Anchorage. Why? I watched the new Pauly Shore movie. Had to watch it mid-flight.
Exactly.
It's the only way to watch it. We're going to give you a little throwback quiz here. Little throwback quiz. We're going to read you a tagline, and you got to guess what movie from your past that tagline was from.
I won't remember it, but go on.
We're going to give it a try.
It's easier than you might think.
Okay. Here's the first one. He's a relative nightmare.
Oh, that's Son-in-Law.
Mm-hmm. See, it's not that bad. It gets one a little harder, but it's not that bad. All right. For Truth, for Justice, for $5 a day.
Jury Duty.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's hard to be cool when, well, this one is, it's hard to be cool when your dad is blank. I don't want to give away the last one.
I don't know that one.
Dude, give him the name. It might even still be hard.
It's hard to be cool when your dad is Goofy.
Oh, yeah, that's a Goofy movie.
Yeah, a classic.
Mm-hmm.
A classic.
Yes. All right, this is where it gets, I think, a little bit harder. Why see dead people when you can see this? No, got it. Know. That would be The Bogus Witch Project, year 2000.
Oof. That was a paid gig for that for sure. That was terrible.
All right, the hardest one's last. So see if you get this one.
Be nice to Eric, or Eric won't be nice to you.
Oh, that's Phantom of the Mall.
There you go. All right, that's more than a pass.
There we go. Right. That was a good one.
Guest House, VOD, September 4th. All those places you listed, I'm sure YouTube is, and again Frontier Airlines. I mean, catch a flight. Nothing to do. Paulie, thank you so much. This was a blast. Also, thank you from Trill. I guarantee you he's going to be over the
moon. Please tell everybody to tune into my podcast. It's called Random Rants. It's on all things comedy. Also, be tuned for my new one-man show called Stick With The Dancing, Stories of My Childhood. And if you're in Las Vegas and you want a part-time job as my assistant, hit me up at paulierants@gmail.com. I'm looking for fast typers and also assistant editors. Yeah, there you dude.
Go. Thank you so much, man. We appreciate it. Good luck with everything.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you, guys. Later.
Mulan. Very different from the animated movie. Though the animated movie didn't create the story. This is a very legendary story. Been around for ever.
Legend, wait for it, dairy. Oh, dude, that was a good one. Did you make that up?
To save her ailing father from serving in the Imperial Army, a fearless young woman disguises herself as a man to battle Mulan. Northern invaders.
That's Mulan.
Yep. In China. It is Mulan. I honestly completely forgot how to pronounce the name of the lead actress. I think it's like Liu Yifei. Liu Yifei? Okay. That was Liu Yifei. Close enough. Yeah. Donnie Yen. Jet Li in the movie as well. Which I did forget. I did completely forget Jet Li was in this movie. Nicky Caro directed it. Pretty decent sized budget. Decent enough to the fact that this had to go to streaming was a pretty big fucking deal.
$200 million
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dollars on the budget. big time movie. It's only done $6 million at the box office, guys, which is not good.
No, this is going to be a tough one for. It's going to be a tough one for Disney to swallow. Interesting reviews so far. 79% critics approval rating around Tomatoes, 54% from the audience. Now, I don't know how much of that is people seeing it or being review bombed. This movie has a very weird review bomb setup. And we know this from posting about the movie on our social media channels because of a lot of political tie-in stuff. And if you want to go down that road, you can go down that rabbit hole because there was a lot of controversy surrounding this movie in terms of that respect. So I don't know if it's complete review bombing or does people feel that way. I know Metacritic is much lower. It's a 3.2. I know the scale is different. 68 from the critics on Mulan. I didn't hate Mulan. I didn't hate it.
No, that's about the best thing I think you can say about it.
Like it's very competently made. There are plenty of parts that look great, but it just lacks what most of these lack, and that is charm, heart. And I know that's not what they're going for, because this is a very clear committal to a different direction than The Lion King.
Yes.
Now, granted, The Lion King came out after Aladdin, right?
Yeah.
Regardless, The Lion Barely, King is the one that really stirred the pot the most. So people were like, this has no fucking emotion. And so Mulan, they were like, well, let's change course. Let's make this let's make this PG-13. Let's make this an older movie. A movie for older people. It's a war movie. It's much more centered on that. There's no musical numbers. There's no Mushu. It's a complete change of course. And I respect the commitment to that. Like, I like that idea. But there's no fucking heart or charm in the movie at all. It's just lifeless at times. And there's a lot of it that I found entertaining, but where it can really make leaps and bounds and be a solid to good movie or great, it's just missing. And it's not to say that you can't do that with the Disney live action remakes. And that's the one thing that's kind of grinded me a bit on like the reaction. They're like, oh, another Disney live action remake with no heart or soul. Like, that's what they've all been. They have. The Jungle Book is fucking excellent. The Jungle Book is an excellent movie. And what Jon Favreau did with that movie, I think, was great. The problem was it was The Jungle Book.
Well, and that's why I think everybody was so disappointed with The Lion King. Is because we thought Jon Favreau could work the same magic he did with The Jungle Book. But I rewatched The Jungle Book today because I just wanted to watch another remake movie. And so much of that Jungle Book is actually tied to the voice actors that makes it enjoyable. Like, I enjoyed Bill Murray as Baloo. Like, that brings me into the movie. And then Christopher Walken is King Louie. Like, I love that shit.
You're also working within much stricter lines with The Lion King because it's so much more recent. It's so iconic that if you've upset the apple cart too much, you're just going to get destroyed.
Yeah, that's true.
And they didn't care about that with Mulan, which is fine. But they committed so hard to the structure that the material, the content in it, I think lacked.
It's
tough. I gave it a 69. I really don't hate the movie at all. I just don't. It lacked anything for me to say it was really good.
This is tough to say. There were parts like that I thought were enjoyable, and there were parts that I thought had charm. But then some parts where the charm felt forced, like the teapot scene, right? Like, and the movie also does something I kind of enjoyed, which it takes a little musical, it puts in musical cues from the animated version. So like, You'll Bring Honor to Us All. That song was kind of put over that teapot scene, but like that was where they kind of made some of the characters more cartoonish to try to bring some heart to the movie, which like I felt was okay at the time. And then it kind of got like very serious, which I mean, Mulan is going to war, which I get, but tonally, it goes back to the PG-13. Jeff, what you're saying is like, this is a war movie and I guess like aging it up is one thing, but at the same time, it's like, you can't help, but when you talk about it in terms of it being a remake, It's not a remake except for the fact that Disney's simply trading in on the goodwill of their animated property and
yes.
that being recognized as a brand name to essentially present a retelling of an ancient story. So people say it's described on Wikipedia as a live action adaptation, but it's its own thing, obviously, because of the musical. And due to that, I don't think it tonally knows exactly what it is. And that kind of leads me to just not, I was entertained, but I wasn't enjoyably entertained. I was watching it cause it was new. But I give it a 60. I didn't hate it. There are parts I thought that were good. There are other parts that I thought were just kind of, forced, and like the bathing scene, which I didn't love. But then like I liked the what was the character? The Jian Lang character. Like I liked her. Like I liked that type of, like the mysticism in the movies. It's just tying it all together. Oh, and it's also like 2 hours, which I hate complaining about length of movies, but you're thinking like you're going on Disney Plus. Like, I feel like if I watch something on Disney Plus, there needs to be a warning label if it's over 90 minutes.
Like, I think the word I was looking for is safe.
Yeah.
It feels so fucking safe. Like, it just, yeah.
I see. Okay. So I think there's some good things about this movie. I think the number one good thing is that I think they're very dedicated to telling the story of Hua Mulan. Like this story is for a Chinese audience. They cast all Chinese actors. They weren't trying to whitewash this at all, throw in a fucking Matt Damon or whatever. That, I think, and that dedication to that, I think, was awesome. And this, I think parts of this movie that also kind of catered to Chinese cinema, even like the running up the walls or over the rooftops and stuff, and the mystical element that they added into it. That stuff, I think, is really cool. And that dedication is not something I think we've seen really from Disney before, at least not in their live action stuff before. So that's cool. But I think that where they kind of struggled in this is that they were trying to tell this story, this adult legendary story, and also try and make this semi targeted towards a kid audience. I think they completely failed at both because they're mishmashing tonally, like you were saying, Trill, between both areas. And it made me watch, like, after I finished watching this movie, the one thing that immediately came to mind was I wish Disney did not have the rights to this, because I wish I could see like an adult version of Mulan and see like this legend told out in an epic war movie that was catered for adults, because I don't think they did enough for us. I don't think they did enough for kids, and they got stuck in this in-between zone.
No, like,
and they also introduced Disney, like,
it was kind of pushed that way, and it really, like, it's PG-13.
It's awkward.
In the least amount of sense possible. Like, it fucking toes the line. If it wasn't war and death, you really, like, and it's not even that extravagant war and death. It's not like it's a gory war movie.
People are dying in a way that isn't as violent as an avalanche. And I think that it felt awkward when they tried to force more adult stuff, and it felt awkward when they tried to force, I would say, more childish humor, like the one guy that he almost reminded me of, like Josh Gad in a sense,
yes.
Cricket. So that guy, like making him do more stuff felt awkward, make the teapot scene with the sister felt more awkward. And the one thing that they lost throughout all of this was that no single character in this movie at all really has any characterization whatsoever. Like, you do not get a depth to Mulan. You don't get a depth to, like, her sisters. Like, why even include? I think the character with the most depth is Mulan's dad, maybe, because he gets the most emotional lines, but nobody else is anything. Well, Donnie Yen in this movie as the emperor, maybe the worst acting I've ever seen in my entire life. I think the editing in this movie, where every single scene, it feels as if like it's begging for more. Like, the scene is clearly not over yet, and they cut to a completely different moment. That's fucking annoying. So I think the love interest was horrible, and I think that it was very awkward. And using chi almost like a midichlorian type effect in this movie, it was not confusing, but something that wasn't even necessary. Like, instead of making it this mystical ability that makes women able to rise up and, you know, defeat and overcome these odds in this time, instead of making it a magical thing, it's just a real person. Like, why have to include that element of it? Mm-hmm. So other than that, though, I mean, it is undeniably entertaining at times. It just feels as if this was fucked up on the editing bay floor.
It's a very smidge below average safe movie. That's exactly like I expected to dislike it more, honestly, based on early returns. And I guess objectively, it's not terrible at all. Like, especially in comparison to some of the other live action remakes that they've done, because there are some that are terrible. But like this for me, this is below Jungle Book, Beauty and the Beast, Cinderella, Lion King, Aladdin, Christopher Robin. It's better than Dumbo, better than Lady and the Tramp. I like it better than, I'm not a Maleficent fan. Those aren't my thing. But it's incredible. It's a right below average movie.
The other thing about it is like, there's something about Dumbo. I mean, don't even get me started on not the Fox and the Hound, but the Lady and the Tramp. Cause that heartless. That was just like,
there's a reason that went right to streaming without question.
Yeah, we just need to get something up on Disney Plus. Dumbo was the one that rubbed me the worst way, because that was almost like, hey, these fucking idiots are going to watch any of these fucking remakes. So we should just put anything out there and Tim Burton can go put his Tim Burton-y twist on Dumbo and you guys are going to love it. And it kind of, like Jeff was saying, it put this dividing line in these Disney remakes where there's like a clear line of separation between the ones that I think are very competently done and true to the original. And, you know, that's what I was going back and forth, because, you know, part of my score being low is the fact that, like, if you're going to do a remake and you're going to mark it off of the fact that this is Mulan and you're going to use the same font as the animated movie and tie that in, like, part of what I want to see and part of what I want to get out of it is that feeling of that original animated movie just in like a live action context. And call me a baby brain for that, but like that's what I think, that's the value add that like Disney brings to the table with these, is like they have these animated movies with this great music, and what they're doing here is like Mulan is folklore. Like they don't own the rights to Mulan, but essentially they do for an American audience, because they've essentially taken a monopoly on the way Americans think about Mulan and all this stuff, and they kind of just cashed in on like this animated movie, and they produced something that, you were talking about the characterization. It's like, I felt like I connected with the animated Mulan way better than the live action one.
Didn't see Mulan, the cartoon version, I would have no fucking clue what was going on in this movie whatsoever. I feel like.
Yeah. But I even think like,
seems people say that too. It's like, you only need it as an accessory, which is not what it usually is with these.
So, you know, like part of it is like, when I think about it is like, I'm trying to like view it as, you know, one, a movie, but two, like just from a business perspective, is like, this doesn't feel as cynically made as Dumbo. Like, and I don't think Dumbo essentially was cynically made, but it felt that way because, you know, here's the shit, here's the slop you like, here's Danny DeVito. You guys like this guy, right? And it's just not a good movie. This felt like it was made with care. This felt like people, like Ken Jack was saying, that they wanted to get the casting right. They wanted to be true to the source material. They wanted to have the actors in the right parts, and I think they did a good job for the most part. The issue was you still gotta make like a competent and compelling movie on top of that. And I don't know, it just didn't. We watch it for yourself. It just doesn't really feel that way. It just doesn't flow right, and it's too long. And it doesn't have the same heart that the movie it's trying to market itself off of has, despite it, you know, this costing $200 million to make. And that in itself, I think, is kind of an indictment on these live action remakes, to where like we talk about it and say like, it's not from a standpoint of like, you're ruining this or you're ruining that, but it's almost like, what's the point in doing it if you can't have some sort of heart and soul? And you started to think that with The Lion King. And I think Mulan's better than The Lion King because it does try to go down its own path. But at some point, you're going to run out of these movies to remake, and you're just going to be scraping the bottom of the barrel. And then you as a viewer have to decide whether it's worth fucking watching the live action remake of like the direct-to-video Hercules 2.
And I think that you kind of nailed it in that a lot of the remakes just they lack a soul. It's like Pet Sematary shit or something like that with a lot of them. And I do think that this had a soul in that it did try to do its own thing, which is what I personally liked a lot about the Aladdin, is that, you know, Guy Ritchie put his own spin on it. Like, and that was, I think, the overwhelming problem with Lion King, is that it was just shot for shot remake. Give us your money, you fucking asshole. And that sucks. And I think if they're able to find, if you want to remake one of these Disney animated movies into a live action, they're doing obviously Little Mermaid coming up soon. You need to, I think you pay homage to whatever it is that you're doing. In this case, The Little Mermaid, let's say. But you need to, importantly, tell your own story as if these people aren't invested in only simply because of the animated series or animated show. You need to tell a compelling story. You need to give these characters some sort of fucking background, some sort of depth, and some sort of like ability to, you know, gather empathy from your audience. And they just don't do that really in a lot of
these
movies.
I mean, the character thing was a big issue here. Like that, I think that was the more I had a hard time like figuring out how to like articulate my main issue, but I think that is the issue. Is that you have...
You don't give a shit about anybody in this movie.
Yeah, like I think they hit the mark of just enough in every area. Some areas they went above and beyond, and the movie does entertain and dazzle. But they were like, all right, well, we hit the required limit of character development. We hit the required limit of this to make this movie work and not be terrible. Which you can't say about some things like Dumbo, for example. Dumbo didn't hit almost any of those limits. This one, it hit the marks where it had to be a competent movie, to be entertaining at times, but it never did enough to go above and beyond. Like, I respect the commitment to the type of movie it tried to be, but you have to commit way more than that. You got to overcommit from that in order for it to be good or even great.
Yeah. Again, I think my main takeaway from this movie is I kind of wish I could see a Mulan movie that wasn't related to Disney whatsoever. I mean, that would, I think, would be incredible.
I wonder in hindsight, and I've actually heard some reviewers do this, a guy that I mention all the time, Chris Stuckman, said it too. I wonder if hindsight, this movie's marketed to not to families as much as the past ones. It's definitely marketed to families in the sense of Disney Plus now. I think the marketing and the push is way different than it would have been for theaters. But I wonder in hindsight, with the success of Parasite, had they gone with a subtitled movie? Had they known that it would be at least decently accepted? Now, I'm not saying Parasite made $1 billion, because it fucking did not at all. But Parasite became a popular movie and a much talked about movie. I wonder, had we known that that was going to be successful, and they would have tried to have not made it an English-speaking movie. Food for thought.
For any actor and actress, I think it's pretty easy to say that if you're speaking in your mother tongue, it's easier to act in whatever scene it is. I mean, I don't even know if that is the mother tongue for all these cast members in the main roles necessarily, but I would much prefer to see if there was there to make another version of Mulan that was in, I would say, like, let's say Mandarin, and they were able to speak in their tongue and subtitle. I would prefer that. I don't think Disney would ever do that, though. Ever, just because their main audience and their main money getter, I think, for the live action stuff is usually us, even though I'm sure the split worldwide, it leans a little bit more towards worldwide.
You know, and that's going to be, like, not to get too deep in like geopolitics or whatever, but it is interesting when, you know, obviously different countries have different sensibilities. And, you know, we've certainly been very critical on American sensibilities and how that portrays into cinema. And talking about like shit, like fart cops and all that stuff. And like the boner dogs joke, you know, is a joke about the very successful, like Happy Madison production. So I'm not saying, you know, any sensibilities better than the others, but you do have to wonder that like when movies are made to try to appease different markets, if you do end up with like a gigantic, you know, kind of like nobody's happy sort of deal. I don't know what the answer is there. Like, you know, certainly like if you have something like Star Wars, which we talked about, like doesn't do well overseas. Like, I think there's something very American about Star Wars that just doesn't translate and people aren't interested in. But if you're developing something like this and you want it to be big in China and you have to bridge two different cultures, I think that's a challenge in and of itself. And I'm not saying it's not worth doing something if you have to do that. But like, you know, I think they're two very different countries with very different pop cultural sensibilities, and you gotta be cognizant of that and make something around. It's gotta be really challenging, and I don't know what the end product necessarily looks like.
We'll go through a couple questions here. Danger High Roller says, oof, did I hate this a lot? Why do they make her have superpowers essentially?
That's what I was saying. The Chi addition, I still think it was a big mistake, because again, I think the whole point of this story and why, like the way they marketed, especially Disney, was like, this is a girl power movie. This is women can accomplish anything a man can. And Mulan is, I think, in its heart, like obviously a story of a woman overcoming the odds of the time. And when you supersede that by just having her, oh yeah, she has superpowers. Now, I feel like that kind of ruins the point. Kind of ruins the whole point of the movie.
I would agree. And then ask the biggest question of like, who is this for? Like who, because this, I think, was the most confusing one of the Disney ones. You're like, who exactly are they trying for here? And I think it having to go on Disney Plus was and for it to be $30 for a family to want to get this to see this, they had to kind of change the way they marketed it and pushed it. Obviously. Mm-hmm. Another comment, I think Mulan's biggest flaw was that it just wasn't very fun.
Yes.
When they tried to be fun, they weren't.
That actually, yeah, you know, and there's some like,
I think would you agree, Trill, that there's a difference between entertaining and fun too? Because I would say there is.
Oh yeah. I think something like The Last of Us 2, which I just finished, is highly entertaining, but not super fun. It's a slog and very violent. And I think this is like entertaining in the sense that like, it's fun to watch some of the shit that happens in it, but it's not fun. Like that, you know, one of the things is like Jet Li being the emperor, I think was supposed to be kind of like a reveal type thing. And like, even that just didn't feel like that felt like it fell flat. I don't know. It didn't really have any big moments.
There was any time I think they tried to move over to the more Disney side of like humor or levity or whatever. I think it worked sometimes with the guy Cricket. Like I laughed a few times at him, but other times it felt really forced throughout and it's frustrating.
My pants.
I immediately thought he was Josh Gad. Okay, so this is Josh Gad from Mulan. All right, we get you.
I don't know, man. It's not fun. I mean, so I think it's worth seeing just because there's not much to see right now. But the thing, here's the tough part about like the decision you have to make. Is it worth paying $30 for to watch one time? That's a calculus you got to run by yourself.
Yep.
For me, it was. I was happy to pay $30 for it. Like wife and I and daughter watched it and like we enjoyed it. It was something new, it was something whatever. But like if I was 22, I would never spend $30 to watch Mulan. And I don't think a lot of people would. And the question is like if families are the market for this and then they tune into it and then it's like this isn't really a family oriented movie. I'm really wondering like just where it ends up. Does it end up in like the you know, the ET like landfill of like our cultural imagination, or, you know, it could go on to be very successful overseas. I don't know it, but I think at least it's worth talking about because this is a very interesting movie and it's right on that line for me in terms of being better than Dumbo, but certainly not anywhere approaching the Beauty of the Beasts and the Jungle Books and the Aladdins of the Disney remake catalog.
It's, yeah, I mean, I think our perspective on this is definitely tough. Yours is different, obviously, with a kid like ours. Like, we have to see it. But I've seen people kind of go back and forth. Some people say, you know, I live in a big city. It's $15 for a movie anyway. What's the difference? But I kind of get it. Again, them dropping and saying it's going to be on in December is definitely makes kind of a bit of a change there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
I do feel like... this is one of those things though, you think like $200 million put into this and, you know, we've talked about it, like individuals work on movies and collectively they form Disney or collectively they form whatever. Like this is something that a lot of people put a lot of work on and, you know, it is art, right? Movies are art. It is a piece of art. And it is something that, kind of, you know, got stalled up and didn't release optimally because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And that's going to keep happening to a lot of these movies. I think this one like will be pretty historic because I think this is going to be, you know, if you're into cinema history and you look at it from like a 10 year rear view window or 20 year rear view window, I think Mulan will probably be the movie that was single-handedly impacted maybe the worst from this, from just with the $200 million budget.
For sure. Well, maybe Tenet. I don't know. Cause they're at $700 million to make up. So
well, only five now.
How much was the budget for Tenet? $200 million too?
Yes,
so maybe Tenet too. You know, Tenet as well.
Tenet will be a long discussion this week. That's all I'm going to say. A lot to talk about with Tenet. I fucking loved it. But I like, it's one of the ones where I'm like, man, I love that. Boy, people are going to hate that movie.
I think from reading the reviews, it's like Christopher Nolan basically just gave up on trying to do anything except entertain himself. Mm. He's like, I'm just going to make a things I'm just gonna do shit I like.
I mean, they're at the end I was like, god, how the fuck did he think that up? So we'll save it. Mulan 67 average, audience gave it a 66. 60 for Trill, 72 for Ken Jack, 69 for myself. It's up now on movierankings.net. If you want to check out other reviews and the details and all that shit. Tenet later in the week. Maybe New Mutants eventually, but that's you know, you gotta saddle on up to go to the theaters now. So that might be, that's a tough one. There's that movie on, actually Sunday will be that Netflix movie. I'm thinking of Ending Things.
Yes.
The Charlie Kaufman movie.
Kaufman one.
Which people seem to really like. I have not watched yet. So that'll be Sunday. Charlie Kaufman. So hold off on New Mutants.
Just want to get good and depressed before I watch this bad boy.
top 10 remakes of all time. Top 10 remakes of all time. Tro, you'll give your thoughts throughout this list.
Yeah, my brain broke today.
Oh, you have to do you have a fantasy draft auction. That's a fantasy draft auction is miserable.
No fucking joke, man. It's no joke. You need brain power for that.
I just did the annual dance of resetting my Yahoo password.
Always,
because what else am I going to use a Yahoo account for?
And then you reset it, and the password that you try to change it to was actually the password, so you can't use that again.
God.
All right, here's how we did it. We did a combined vote with the audience, myself and Ken Jack. I'll read off the 10 through 6, and then we'll get into the top 5. Number 10, Ken Jack had it at his number 7, The Invisible Man.
It's very good. It's significantly better.
Yes, a much better movie. Number 9. My number 9 wasn't on the list, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Which got remade. Yes. That got remade into a steaming pile of ass.
What was garbage. It called? The Hustle?
The Hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Just a big, was it my worst movie of last year?
Hello, I'm Rebel Wilson.
I fell over this chair. Isn't that funny? No.
They took that amazing scene from the original. Yeah, I gave it a 3. It was the worst movie I saw last year, a 3 out of 100. Where he's hitting his legs. In like the wheelchair, and instead they did it where they put the fry into the poopy toilet and they made her eat the French fry. Yeah, they're like, this is just as funny. Let's do this poop fry. But the number 9 on our list is The Fly. I had The Fly at number 7.
Yeah,
Fly fucking rules.
Fly's so gross.
Number 8. I don't actually love this, but the audience had it at 6, and that means it gets placed into our top 10. That's Magnificent 7.
The Fuqua one,
the new one. Yeah. Ugh.
Whoa.
I didn't dislike the Magnificent Seven, but
nowhere doesn't hold a candle to that or Seven Samurai,
which I actually don't even think Magnificent Seven's on the original's not even on our database. Yeah. I found the Magnificent Seven very enjoyable. I probably gave it in the 70s. I gave it a 75. You gave it a 60. Yeah. Enjoyable, but that wouldn't be top 10 for me.
It was very, very, I wouldn't call it, I don't know if schlocky is the right word, but very, I don't know, nothing. There's nothing really to that movie whatsoever, but action scenes were kind of cool.
Yeah.
Whatever Skarsgård was the villain in that one. I forget which one.
Number seven is Little Shop of Horrors. Little Shop of Horrors got remade into a musical. Hey, if it falls in that list, it has to be up there. I love that movie. That's a movie I kind of want to review for our Rick Moranis episode.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Moranis.
Yeah. It was a remake, so it definitely qualified. I fucking love Little Shop of Horrors. That was my number 6. And then rounding out the 10 through 6 of the combined list is Scarface. I didn't have it on my list. Ken Jack had it at 6. Audience had it at number 2.
It's extremely good. And again, once again, much better than the original movie.
I don't think I ever saw the original Scarface.
It's very old. It's probably, I think it's like, what, 1930s or something like that, I want to say.
Yeah, same. I'm Scarface. Yeah, I got a scar on my face.
Yeah, the original Scarface was 1932. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, top 5. All the top 5 were on all 3 of our lists. Number 5. I'm actually surprised it's not a little higher. I think the audience is mildly to blame. Audience had it at 7. I had it at 3. Kendrick had it at 3. I had it at 4. And that's True Grit. Number 5, best remake, True Grit. The Coen Brothers movie. True, I'll let you throw some thoughts because we talked about this recently pretty highly.
I love True Grit. I don't know if I've seen the original as well, but I do know it would be hard to top what the Coen brothers did with it.
All offense meant to John Wayne, but the new one was better.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I haven't watched many old movies. I haven't watched the original. You guys watch that?
No, I've seen the original.
The original, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I've seen that in a lot of those the pinnacle Western ones, yeah.
So, like, you know, what was the original like?
It was like imagine the same exact thing, except there's John Wayne, like, spitting out lines between cigarette puffs for takes.
Okay.
Hey, you're a little girl, huh?
You saying you got the True Grit on you? Someday I'm going to have an airport named after me. What are you going to have?
Ain't going to have shit.
Unlike one of the other movies in this list, I have not seen the original True Grit in a very, very long time.
That's also why it broke my brain, because I haven't watched many old movies, and like a lot of my favorite remakes are based on old movies. I haven't seen them.
I don't think you have to have seen the old ones in order to have picked one here.
I don't know. I just feel like
I never saw the original Fly.
I feel like that would be lying if I said I like the Fly better than the original Fly. I haven't seen the original Fly.
Yeah, fair enough. I played Genghis Khan. Want to know how? He did. Don't look at me like that. He did.
John Wayne played Genghis Khan?
Yeah, in a movie in like the 50s. I swear to God. They just put a mustache on him and said, yeah, that's Genghis Khan. It's on fucking John Wayne. God damn, dude.
I always forget about that. Fuck.
It's so funny. It's such a funny picture. It's not funny. It's fucked up, but still.
True Grit, number 5. 310 to Yuma missed the list. It's at number 11, by the way.
Very good movie as well.
I had 310 to Yuma at number 8. Yeah, 310
to Yuma. Foster Baby.
Very solid remake. Moving on, number 4, best remake of all time. We'll specify which one. I have it at 5. Ken Jeck has it at 5. Audience has it at 3. That's A Star Is Born. Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper.
Yes.
Good thing you specified.
Well,
there's so fucking many of them.
I know. I'm just like, good thing you specified. People are going to think it was the Christofferson one.
You know, the Christofferson Streisand one is, I kind of enjoyed that, but it very much is out of date.
Mm.
Like, Kris Kristofferson, legend. Barbra Streisand, legend. But I much prefer the newer one.
It's a better movie.
Yeah.
The music really was a fucking cultural moment, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I think the 76 Star Is Born, like, I don't think it was like a 5 out of like a 10. I think it was more like 50, I think. I've never seen the... like the,
I don't know, 30s or 20s one, whatever, either.
I've never seen the Judy Garland one.
Mm-hmm.
Part of how I rank these, I didn't rank these solely based on score. I part of it is what, how, like, the quality of the remake in terms of like difference between the original one and what they've made here. So we'll keep that in mind going forward. Because the next one on the list would be my number one. The original movie is fucking terrible, and I did watch it fairly recently. And that's Ocean's 11. I had it number one, yeah. Kendrick had it number two, audience had it number 5. The original is not just bad, but it has one of the worst endings to you'll ever seen. And I'm not actually going to spoil it, but I did rewatch for the first time recently. I'd seen it before, but I hadn't rewatched it in a long time, because when Ocean's 11 came out, I asked to see the original as a younger kid, and it just did nothing for me, and I rewatched it. Boy, it fucking stinks.
The original was just, there's an entire 60-minute scene of them all sitting around a baccarat table saying ring-a-ding-ding.
like, we're the Rat Pack, baby.
Smoking and just saying ring-a-ding-ding.
Ring-a-ding-ding, dollface.
Nice Van Heusen shirt.
All I'll say is that the movie... For how much of a high Ocean's 11 ends on, think about the exact opposite, and that's how the original ends.
It's just bad. The
lowest downtrodden, bland fucking ending.
A lot of good heist movies from like the 60s and like late 50s in that period too. Just the man, that movie stunk. Not good at all.
Like the initial team up scene where they all, it's just, the whole movie is so fucking bad. It's a bad movie. It's again, it's not even just like, oh, they improved greatly. The original is a horrible fucking movie. Mm-hmm. Number two, based on a 2002 movie from Hong Kong, in Affairs, The Departed. Ken Jack's number one,
my number three, audience is number four. And this one, for those who don't know, because we actually got this on our Reddit thread, someone said, like, does The Departed count? And someone replied with kind of what it is. They're like, there are parts in the movie that are just a shot-for-shot remake. So, yeah, The Departed very much qualifies. I mean, The Departed for me is a 99 of 100, so very deserving to be in my – well, they improve with the rat at the end.
Yes.
Isn't it great when you can have a movie you like as much as The Departed, and then you can also still make fun of it to humble yourself? Like, exactly. It's a 99 of 100, but that rat – oh, boy, did the rat stink.
Keep Marty honest.
You have to. What if he did that on purpose? He's like, this movie's too good. I must put this really on-the-nose moment at the end.
Yeah, see? Ring-a-ding-ding. It's too good. He definitely said that at least once.
Marty?
No, he was like, in his 20s and the 70s.
I want a whole prequel about, like, what the rat... Like, what if they did a prequel where, like, it was just about the rat? But the rat wasn't, like, couldn't talk or anything?
Yeah, it's called Ratatouille, bitch.
No, but the rat can't talk. But the rat also happened to be there at, like, very important points in the movie. Like, the rat just following them around happenstance the whole time.
Like, oh, I gotta get out of this apartment. Something bad's gonna happen. Then he shows up in the gunfight. Oh, fuck. Shouldn't have gone to this warehouse.
The rat got caught on camera after killing everybody. He's gotta get the tape back.
God. Oh, shit. What's this pizza doing in the subway? Better grab it while I can.
I love pizza rat.
Next on the list, number one. Number one's an interesting one because I feel like of the two we just mentioned, this is the least remake-y, and that's Casino Royale.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is a remake, but in terms of, like, shot for shot, it's not.
No, not even. It's like a totally different movie with the exception of gambling being a part of it.
It's a remake in title, but it is it qualifies. I'm allowing it to qualify because it's on every listicle in the world. So that's number two for me, number four for Ken Jack, number one for the audience is Casino Royale.
Extremely good movie. Arguably the best Bond movie ever made.
Yeah, I think arguably. It might be, yeah, I think you're right. Like, I'm trying to, I said, like, well, there's a lot of James Bond movies, and I know we ranked them.
I'd say Skyfall, like, a hair, but still.
Yeah, but I think people have soured on Skyfall since then. I can see where a lot of people say Casino Royale, just because it is so, it's so stripped down, straightforward. And the other one, only other one would, like, for me would be Goldeneye, but Goldeneye is pure nostalgia.
Goldeneye is just not very, very good movie either.
Yeah.
Which hurts that.
Goldeneye.
Goldfinger.
What is the secret of your eye hole?
It was my urethra, Brond. Ring a ding ding.
There's our top 10. Invisible Man, The Fly, Magnificent Seven, Little Shop of Horrors, Scarface, True Grit, Stars Born, Ocean's 11, Departed, Casino Royale.
Not one Disney one.
Not on the list. Mm-hmm. 310 to Yuma, Homeward Bound. That was number 12.
I had that on my list, yeah.
Homeward Bound, fucking love Homeward
Italian
Bound.
Job. Can't believe that didn't make the list.
Italian Job, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, The Mummy.
Yes, how did you guys not vote for The Mummy? Sickening.
I'm sorry. Parent Trap was on the audience's list. I Am Legend. The Jungle Book was on there, deservedly so. And then lastly, the audience's number 10 was The Longest Yard.
Okay. Admittedly so, I really enjoyed The Longest Yard remake growing up. I quoted it nonstop.
Oh, I did too, yeah.
That said, the original is a better movie.
That's one where I just was embarrassed when I grew up. I was like, oh, God damn it. Bragged to my dad about how awesome this movie was. Dad, have you seen the new Adam Sandler Longest Yard?
You always protect the McNuggets. Dad. Let's do this one for caretaker.
That's actually really good.
That was Peter Griffin, Adam Sandler.
Remember when he got real life Peter Griffin for the fictional debate?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
What did he say? He's like, shit, I don't remember. What did you have him say?
Freaking sweet.
I can find it.
Lawrence.
I paid like $15 for it. Probably.
Hey, Lois, come on over and see me sometime, big boy.
This is what he said. Hang on.
Yabba dabba doo, it's me, real life Peter Griffin here, wishing Trill.
Oh wait, I had him say yabba dabba doo. That's right.
Yabba dabba doo, it's me, real life Peter Griffin here, wishing Trill Ballins good luck in fictional debates tonight. Here's some quick words of wisdom. What I've done, I'll face myself to cross out what I've become, erase myself, and let go of what I've done. Yabba Jabba Jew, which means real life
Peter. The laugh at the end. If you didn't, if we didn't just talk about how that was like the cameo, I would have thought that that was just Seth MacFarlane doing.
only one request not filled. Fucking Chewbacca, mom.
Yeah, it's too good for us, huh? Fine, fuck you. Bang. Stay back in 2012, where you came from.
And then I had that. What?
Well, I got to say, like a lot of people, just for some reason, are out of our price range.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, yeah.
Not Toby Keith though.
Toby Keith impersonator. Yeah.
Toby Keith was a good one. If you haven't heard this one.
Yeah, Red Solo Cup. You guys like this one, huh? Wait, that's not even my song.
Yeah, it's me. Took a break from recording new music just to come in here and let you know that I thought the Chewbacca lady's a fucking douche. While we're on the topic, I think we should take out fucking Sugar Bear, too. We should proceed to party, man. Let's do that. You got a Red Solo Cup out there? Raise it on up. Want to hear you singing.
Then he went in and he played the song for like 3 minutes. I was like, just play a quick clip of Red Solo Cup. And his reply was like, here you go. And I go, thanks. And he goes, that was weird. One of the strangest requests I've gotten.
Now, Red Solo Cup is a cup you can drink from. And when I drink it, I don't even know the lyrics.
The only one who went off script really was Tay Zonday. He went off script.
He's a king.
Like 20 minutes. 20 minutes for a cameo.
This was just so long. He refused to not say my name. I put in a request. I'm like, don't say my name. Just say Trill's name. He absolutely said my name quickly. All right. That's it. Anything else?
It's all for me.
No, man. I'm gonna go eat some pizza. Some gluten-free pizza, by the way. Yeah. No,
like at home, better. Did you make it?
No, Domino's delivered it. Domino's has the best gluten-free pizza, by the way. In case you're like
annoyed.
I really wish I could get a Noid costume.
That so
like a latex one.
There's no way that exists.
Annoyed costume.
Annoyed suit.
Annoyed costume exists, but is it high quality enough to be like leather or latex to wear? Like, because I'd want to be a smooth Noid.
Yeah, but can you buy a Noid costume?
The Noid.
Oh my god! Yeah, you can.
You're a Noid sub.
You can go to Worth Point Discover Value Store. And you can go, if you start a trial on their website, you can get this unbelievable Noid costume.
Well, that looks like a real Noid costume.
Do you see it?
Yeah, it's like fully molded and everything. Shit. So I was just talking about a costume that have my face sticking out. It'd be like a latex rubber suit that I'd put on.
Yeah, but there's only a mouth hole. There's no eye holes. And you got to zip open the mouth hole. You get walked around on a leash.
Avoid the Noid, baby.
Rest in peace to the Noid.
He's super dead in hell.
No way he's coming back.
What year did I'm going to make a rest in peace graphic for him. When did he die?
I would guess 2003. I was going to say like 5.
Today we remember the Noid. All right.
Yeah, you could just say September 7th, 2005.
That's not even a correct date.
Wait, we got to make sure nothing
September
bad
10th. Happened.
Let's make sure nothing bad happened on September 7th, 2005.
That's it. Tenet, next episode. For Kenji, I can Trump, Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office.